Cooperation seems like such a good idea. Take a look at these fire ants. They have teamwork down to a fine art. When they're exposed to water, they link together to form a living raft or a ball that slowly rotates through the water. Air bubbles, caught, supply the underwater ants with enough oxygen. But that's ants. Tonight, we see what people can do if they can be motivated by a shared vision of what can be. Welcome to Storyline. I'm Chantelle Klingbeil. I'm so glad that you've joined me. We're coming to you live. Now, this means if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you're very welcome to do so throughout our show. It's simple and you can do it in a variety of ways. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE or use 707-200-1070 to call or text. For more instant interaction, find Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories. We're not talking about bedtime stories or children's stories, but about real, true-to-life stories of Bible characters that faced issues, that faced challenges and faith questions. People who, like us, lived in times of change and crisis. In Storyline, we focus on these Bible characters. We look over their shoulders as they struggled with family problems, as they often watched their lives fall apart. As we step into their world to study life from their perspective, we look at their challenges, their heartbreaks, and their victories to find clues for our lives. Studying these Bible characters gives us new perspectives that we can apply. And the best part of it all, the part I love most, is that in these storylines, we always find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. In ancient times, a city without a wall had no defense. Jerusalem had been in ruins for a very long time. The people who had returned from exile were overwhelmed by the immensity of the task. They had to live in and around rubble and ruins, and gradually their hopes and dreams for a better way had given way to the daily grind of survival. They needed leadership, someone who could come in like a breath of fresh air. They needed to be part of something bigger than me and mine. Nehemiah was the man for the moment. You can find the secret of this man's success story in a book named for him in your Bible, the Book of Nehemiah. Let's rewind about 2,400 years. Nehemiah had a good job in the palace at Shusha. He was the king's cupbearer. And then he got news from back home. Nope, wasn't an SMS or an email. This news came in the form of a visiting relative, and the news wasn't that good. Jerusalem was still a pile of rubble. Even though the exiles had been allowed back for some time now, they seem to have lost hope. They've gotten used to just living in between the piles of rubble. This news affected Nehemiah very deeply. He longed to do something to help. But what could he do? He couldn't ask for an unpaid leave from the king. He took the matter to God in prayer and prayed earnestly. After 4 months, his answer came. And what a miracle it was. Not only did the king grant him leave of absence to go and rebuild the walls, the king supplied wood for the building venture and an armed escort. And so Nehemiah arrived in Jerusalem. After only 3 days, he got up in the middle of the night And taking just a few trusted servants, he set out. He set out on a tour of the work that needed to be done. He headed for one of the great gates of the city, or should I say, what had been a great gate. All that met his gaze was piles of rubble and burnt shards of what used to be those mighty pillars supporting those great gates. There was so much rubble lying around that going was slow. They had to negotiate around these piles of rubble as they inspected the wall. They were headed towards the king's pool, but there was so much rubble lying around that Nehemiah's donkey couldn't pass. He actually had to dismount and lead his donkey. The going was so narrow. But Nehemiah finished his inspection and headed back before dawn. He decided to keep under wraps everything he had seen. He didn't breathe a word of any of this, not to the priests, not to the nobles, not to anyone who would actually be working on this great project. And then Nehemiah got everyone together and gave his report. Come, let's face it, we're in a mess. Jerusalem is just a pile of rubble. Its gates, they just burnt remains. Come, let's build the walls. Let's not live with this disgrace anymore. Nehemiah then went on to tell them about miracles, God's miracles that he had experienced firsthand. The way the king had looked in favor upon him and let him go and even provided Nehemiah with all these material benefits. And then God performs a second miracle right then and there. People who for so long had given up hope and become used to living in the rubble, they suddenly catch a vision of what could be, and they want to be a part of it. Yes, let's do it, they say. They roll up their sleeves and they're ready for action. Rebuilding would not be plain sailing. The job itself was huge. And when the leaders of the surrounding foreign settlements got wind of Nehemiah's plans, they were opposed, even violently opposed. But Nehemiah was not one to be intimidated or to let his people be intimidated. He shot right back. The God of heaven will make sure we succeed. We're his servants. We're doing his work, rebuilding. You can keep your nose out of this. It's none of your business. Jerusalem is our business. And so the building began. People began picking through the rubble and building. But this was no haphazard adventure. Everyone who wanted to be involved was assigned a section. The priests were assigned their section. They actually laid the new doorposts for the great gates that would once again protect the city. But it wasn't just priests that were involved. People who were not normally involved with building were ready to tackle something. There was the goldsmith that got a piece to work on. There was the perfumer who also had his section. People were eager to be involved. The merchants built near the marketplace. Some people had a little more challenges. Take Shulam, for instance. He had a section that he wanted to rebuild, but he had no sons to help him with that heavy physical building work. But he was not to be outdone. He wanted to share, and so did his daughters. They joined in and worked hard to complete their section. Everyone was involved. Great things were happening. But the opposition never rests its case. At first, they hung around the building site, making jokes about a fox running across the top of the wall and being enough to make the whole thing tumble down. When this proved ineffective, they began a smear campaign, writing propaganda back to Shusha. Nehemiah and his laborers worked on. And so the opposition grew more intense, and they threatened violence. Nehemiah didn't stop, but he did set up a warning system. He didn't want any of the workers taken by surprise as they worked in between these big piles of rubble. He also had everyone arm himself, even as he worked, and he set up a warning system in case of an attack. But Nehemiah and the other people were confident that they were doing God's work and that God would fight for them. And so they labored on tirelessly. The wall was finished in the month of October. It had taken only 52 days. When the enemies heard this news, and the surrounding nations actually saw it, they knew that something great had happened. They completely lost their nerve. It was obvious that God was behind this great work. God was behind the work, the master architect working time and circumstance. Nehemiah and the rest of the residents of Jerusalem had the opportunity of working with God. Talk about working on something bigger than ourselves. We have with us someone who also knows about the practical side of working on building projects. Welcome to Storyline, Phil.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Right after the break, Phil is going to give us a bit of an insider view into the world of building. Phil Riley knows about the job that Nehemiah faced. Before working as a producer here at Hope Channel, he often came up against broken walls as he worked with his job as a builder. Sometimes there was no wall at all and he had to actually build from scratch. Welcome again to Storyline, Phil.
Thank you very much. It's a
pleasure
to be
here. You know, this is very convenient to have a producer who has so much experience in different fields.
I consider myself a little bit of a jack of all trades.
But you are master of some.
I am. There are some that I've put a lot more time in and spent a lot more time doing it. And this is one that's dear to me and certainly has great memories of a lot of hard work.
Hard hats, hard work.
Exactly.
So what's the difference? You know, we think builder, someone who builds a house, at least over here. Is this the same sort of job that Nehemiah faced?
It's completely different. A lot of people think about construction and they think of a general contractor, you think of a carpenter, you think of people that put up the wood frames of a house, and that's what you think of with building. Of course, in Nehemiah's time, it wasn't the same. It was things have come a long way since then. And back then, they primarily used what we have here is just stones. Okay. And that would be what they would build for the structures, for the homes, for the walls, for everything. It was pretty much mainly stone.
Mainly stonework. And stonework looks like hard work to me. Tell us a little bit about some of the tools. You've just brought, I guess, really basic things that Nehemiah would have...
Well, I'm not sure if he had access to all of these, but these are very basic tools, and you're very right, because when you're working with stone, it's a very heavy material to work with. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of heavy lifting. We have here what I call a mason hammer or a brick hammer, and that's basically made to either break away the stone or you can use the end to kind of chip away at it. Mm-hmm. So each end is really made for just breaking apart that stone.
So actually literally hacking away at the stone.
That's exactly right.
Sounds like fun, but it sounds like a pretty tough job.
That actually is the fun tool.
Okay.
And then we have the trowel over here, and a lot of times you'll see a stone wall, and you've seen, we've all seen those old stone walls that have completely fallen apart.
Right.
To keep that from happening, a lot of times we use mortar and we put it in between. And this is the tool that you basically scoop it up, you put it down, and then you put your stone on top of it.
And,
It's a little bit more than that, but that's the basic understanding.
So if I've got that, I'm qualified?
I would say that you need a little bit more experience, but that's at least a good start.
That's the basic start. Well, let's have a look. I believe that we can have a look at a little bit of the wall, Nehemiah's wall.
That's exactly right. And they've found this wall, and you'll see in there that it's made up of all kinds of stones.
I see some really big stones at the bottom. Those are heavy. They're as big as what they look.
That's exactly right. And the stone walls that we would make today that I've made are a little bit different from the stone walls that you would see that they built. Mm-hmm. Certainly that was big stones piled on top of each other. We use our tools today to basically break them apart and make them fit like a jigsaw. Mm-hmm. And then you put the mortar on top, and it basically is one structure. These, they basically piled the rocks on top of each other, starting with the big ones and then working it up and then filling in the cracks and the holes with smaller stones.
Yes, I saw some tiny little stones jammed in between in all the little crevices.
That's exactly right, just to hold it into place a little bit more.
And these were pretty sturdy.
Oh, these were very sturdy. I mean, when you're talking about the wall that they built, there's no way to know exactly what the dimensions were. Mm-hmm. But a rough, pretty good estimate is about 15 to 20 feet tall.
Mm. And that sounds impressive. A little more than our garden wall, I'd say.
That's exactly it. Well, what's even more impressive to me is how wide they were and how thick they were. They were roughly about the same, which would be about 15 to 20 feet in depth. Wow. So this isn't just a tall wall. This is a very thick, big wall.
This is not something you can just knock over with some or another battering ram, I'm guessing.
No, and that's the exact reason that they needed this, because they needed that protection. Every town, city at that time needed a wall for protection, and that's what they were building, a wall to keep them safe.
Which is probably why Nehemiah was so upset to hear that the wall wasn't built yet.
Exactly right. That's exactly it.
Now, they weren't building exactly from scratch, were they?
No, they had their rubble, and that can be the hardest part, to get those stones into the location or to the location. But that's exactly it. They were building from some stones that they did have there. Mm-hmm. But even then, even with the stones on hand, it takes a lot of work to fit them into place so that they're correct, so that that wall doesn't just fall down as soon as you're done or as soon as someone walks on top of it.
That wall, or that piece of wall that we just looked at over there, one-man job?
Definitely not a one-man job. You're looking at a very big project. In fact,
even by today's standards?
Even by today's standards. So I understand that was undressed stones, so that means that they weren't chipping away at them, and that can take a lot of time. Typically, a good tradesman that knows the work can do about 10 to 12 feet squared in roughly a day, and that's with dressed stone that fits together perfectly. Mm-hmm. These, it seems like it was a little bit more hurried, but even then, that's a long segment, or that's a big segment of the wall. And so it would take a lot of work, not only to get the stones in place, but to fit them correctly.
So what sort of time estimate would you give on just that little piece?
Just that little piece?
If I wanted you to build just that little piece in my backyard.
If it was just me, I would say that it would take certainly weeks. And even with a crew of people, I'd say that you're looking at least a week or two.
So we're looking, and this is using modern technology along with it?
That's modern technology, and that's multiple people. And I don't mean just a few people. I mean a team of people.
And they did it all in 52 days.
Which just baffles my mind, because I know how much work that is. That's a lot of heavy lifting and a lot of work.
You say heavy lifting. What do some of those stones weigh?
You know, those stones are so big that it's going to take several people just to even push it. And that's rolling it on the ground. My first day on the job was moving stones. And I remember that it didn't matter how heavy they were, by the end of the day, even the lightest ones got very heavy. So you're looking at many pounds, multiple people being needed to move even those and put them in place.
Now, before you would start a job like this, what would you do?
Well, when I was starting a job, and if you were building a wall or something like this, Today we need permits. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of permits. There's a lot of not only getting the materials and getting everything in place, but you have to show that this has been planned out. You have to show that there's a blueprint, mm-hmm. that everything's been measured and that it's going to be safe.
According to plan.
And then the county has to double check it and all that. So it takes some time, takes a lot of pre-planning.
Well, this sounds a little bit like Nehemiah with some of that pre-planning, and he sure had trouble with his paperwork at some times.
Oh, definitely. He had a lot more problems than most people have.
Well, Phil, thank you so much for joining us. No state-of-the-art tools, building from rubble, Nehemiah and his unskilled crew set to work on that wall. And if that wasn't enough, the challenge they would still have to face would be bad press and even running the risk of physical assault. Oh, and did I mention they were working without pay? After the break, we're back with special guests as we explore this motivational story. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You may not be sitting in a pile of rubble, but all of us face situations which make us feel lonely and isolated and vulnerable, like those Jews living in the ruins of Jerusalem. On Storyline, we want to assure you that you don't have to face things alone. God is there for you. We also want to help you connect and communicate and be a part of something bigger than yourself. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Download the app or subscribe to the HD podcast. We always enjoy hearing your stories of how Storyline has impacted your life. And again, a big thank you to all of you who have contacted Storyline. We particularly enjoyed the messages we received after last week's show. Thank you. I am very privileged to have some very special guests with us today. And here Well, I don't think that I need to make introductions, but just in case Pastor Brad and Candace Thorpe look very different on Storyline, let me reintroduce them. If you were watching the program just before Storyline, you would have seen Candace. Candace co-hosts our Let's Pray program. She's also the vice president of Hope Channel. Welcome to Storyline, Candace.
Thank you, Chantel. It's a privilege to be here with you.
Thank you for staying on.
Yes, I'm happy to.
After a show.
My favorite subject, so.
We got you. Pastor Brad Thorpe also hosts a live Bible program, Beginnings, and he is president of Hope Channel. Thank you for making time.
Chantel, it's always a privilege to come and study the Bible together.
It is exciting.
It is.
And I'm so glad to have caught both of you at the same time and got you onto Storyline because you have such busy schedules.
Well, we're busy, but you're studying a very, very exciting story tonight with Nehemiah, and I can't resist being here.
Candace said this was one of her favorites.
Oh, it is.
Yes,
it is.
Yes. Yeah. We've always loved Nehemiah. We've been inspired by him so many times. So
This is a motivational story, if ever there was one.
Mm. For sure. Absolutely.
For a person who faces many difficulties and many discouragements, as Nehemiah did, and yet was eminently, not only victorious, but successful, I think is a huge example for Christian leadership today.
And an example not just for leaders, but for team players as well.
Very much so. It's really an example for the Christian church, because the Jewish people in Old Testament times were a spiritual group of people called to accomplish a certain mission. Well, as that corporate body, ethnic, national body, Christians around the world, individuals from every race, nation, color, ethnicity, whatever, who follow God are spiritual Israel. So the lessons of Nehemiah apply very powerfully for us in our Christian walk and in our society today.
Hands-on application.
Very much so.
Well, let's begin at the beginning of our story. Sure. Our story begins with Nehemiah reacting, it would seem on a first reading, rather drastically when he hears the news that Jerusalem is in ruins. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, this shouldn't have come as a surprise to him because Jerusalem had been in ruins for over 100 years. Why is he so upset?
Well, the nation of Israel, centered in the city of Jerusalem and centered in the temple, was the very symbol of what God had done. placing his people at the crossroads of the nations, the crossroads of the continents, to be a lighthouse of truth. And God had opened the way for the people to return. He had opened the way, had given them resources in the previous decrees that had been given by the Persian kings in order for the people to rebuild. And, you know, it wasn't the days of email and texting.
No, SMS.
So he gets this message that, that things weren't going good and that the city wasn't rebuilt, the temple wasn't rebuilt. And he's, you know...
He's devastated.
He's devastated because God's people hadn't done what they were supposed to do and the enemies were oppressing them.
Well, I think part of it too, Chantel, it really is a picture into his character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's a man who dearly loves his roots. And now he sees that these guys, they still haven't got their act together. And so that righteous indignation rises up. Mm-hmm. And as a leader and the talents that God's gifted him, he's not going to sit still. Mm-hmm. So I think that sort of is a setting that, that we see in the very first
As you're saying, the first great characteristic of a leader that we see right over here is the way he identifies.
Yes.
With the project and the people.
This is my family. This is me. Mm-hmm. This is God's work. He had total ownership of the situation.
I like this ownership. It's not just a job
that
needs to be done.
Yes.
That's right.
This goes much further.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Much, much bigger. Well, let's talk a little bit about the much bigger thing, the vision. A motivational leader needs a vision. Nehemiah is the king's cupbearer. What does he know about city planning? Where's he getting this vision? He's got his heart in the right place.
Right. Well, the vision of Nehemiah came from his understanding of what God intended for the Jewish people and what the temple and the city of Jerusalem was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So he had identified with the mission that was based squarely in the Bible. And I think that's a powerful lesson for us today. Our priorities. Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. That's Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. Nehemiah was applying the same principle in his life. So today, we need to own God's work, whether it's in our lives, in our families, whether it's the church. We need to own it. That's me, mine.
It's not someone else's job.
That's right.
this is me. I'm involved over here. This gives Nehemiah the needed expertise he gets or he has.
Well, Nehemiah was a very, very high official. He was the number one person responsible for the security of the king. He had to taste any of the food in order to...
We're talking cupbearer.
That's right. With some good water and a lot of other beverages that he probably had to taste too. But in that situation, he has the opportunity to know a lot of information because he's exposed to a lot of things.
He's at the center of the world, really.
Exactly, right. He was right in the most important city with the most important king, leader, president, however you want to describe him, right there at that time.
So if he didn't personally have the information of how to rebuild, he probably had access to people who knew what needed to be done. And he availed himself of that kind of help.
So he was someone who knew where to go. It's interesting that God had put him, like Joseph, like Daniel, at the right place, at the right time, to get the know-how that he needed.
Yeah, I think as a leader, that's another characteristic. He's a networker.
Mm.
You know, he knows how to work people, how to find people that can help him with a goal.
So a leader's not always that lone ranger out there doing his thing.
And I think that this is a powerful example for many people today. God places people and equips them, gives them abilities and talents and the education and the training to place them in positions of tremendous influence and authority. Daniel was the prime minister of Babylon. Here's Nehemiah, who is the security official for protecting the king. And, you know, we can talk about other people. I think as Christians, we should never shy away from being bold and proactive to get involved wherever our talents and our abilities lie, to get involved with society and be a powerful influence, like Jesus described it, yeast and light. And salt to really permeate our society. That was Nehemiah.
That was Nehemiah. Mm-hmm. Nehemiah is a great leader. Great leaders, I always think, great speeches. I have a dream.
That's
Let's
right.
have a look at Nehemiah's motivational speech. It's not long, at least not the part we see, but in Nehemiah 2:17, we have him beginning with his motivational speech. You want to read it for us, Brad?
Sure. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17. Then I said to them, "You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste, and its gates are burned with fire. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach." Here is Nehemiah. He's realistic. The city is in ruins. He doesn't, cover it over and say, "Oh, everything is fine and good." No, it's a ruin, and we are embarrassed by this, and now God has opened the way. He's given us the full authority of the king of Persia and all these other resources. Let's get with it and do what God has opened us the opportunity to do.
But I wouldn't want to jump too fast, Chantel, mm-hmm. over the fact that here was a man of prayer mm-hmm. and a man of faith. You mm-hmm. know, we're passing through this passage very quickly, and we're not, stopping yes. on those scriptures. But here is a man who prayed. He had, through prayer, developed a plan, and he also, through prayer, waited for the right opportunity to share it with the king. And when the king asked him, he had the holy boldness to jump a hold of that opportunity and to go for it. So, a man of prayer, a man of faith, a man of bold action, a man of courage. Those are all the attributes that we see in Nehemiah.
And this makes the motivational speaker, it's really motivated by the Spirit.
Absolutely.
Which he has through his devotional life.
Yes, certainly.
And not only that, Nehemiah, in the crisis with the king, because the king sees that he's looking rather mm-hmm. depressed and says, "Why are you that way?" Because he had to be sensitive for his own mm-hmm. security.
Right.
And he was somewhat threatened. Now, Nehemiah could have just clammed up. Mm-hmm. He could have just said, "Oh, I'm okay. I'm mm-hmm. okay, king. There's nothing wrong with me. No. You're all okay," and all those kind of things. But no, he said, "Look, my depression, my fact that I look sad, is the tiny little door that God is opening up for me to tell the king of what the problem was." Many people sit back and say, "Oh, yeah, when I've got $1 million and everybody agrees with me and I've got all the resources, then we will go ahead and build or do whatever the case yes. may be." Not Nehemiah. He sees the door cracked open just a little bit and he says, we're going to pry this open and go for it.
Wow. Nehemiah, the inspirational leader. But opposition doesn't stop. It gets more intense and threatening. How does Nehemiah deal with it? Is this a good model for us when we have to deal with opposition? After the break, we explore this question and some other great questions, so stay with us. We'll be right back. In case you've just joined us, we're discussing a great story, the story of Nehemiah. And I have great people with me. I was just saying, it's fun to work with you two.
Well, it's a joy to study the Bible.
Yes. Well, we're talking about the different types of people that Nehemiah gets working. Now, I was really amazed over here. We have goldsmiths. I don't see a goldsmith who's used to all that fine work, right, pushing these big stones around. We have the priests, merchants, governors. And in chapter 4, verse 12, I really like that part, where we have the man that doesn't have any sons.
Right, verse 12.
And it gets all his daughters involved over here with that hard manual labor.
Pushing and prying and lifting these big stones.
That must have been impressive.
Well, maybe the women were out there cooking for the guys.
Oh, no,
maybe they brought them lots of good food.
Well, in general, yes. But in verse 4, verse 12, yes, they actually say that the woman did the work.
Yeah,
and they even get an honorable mention.
They
must have been really, really impressive over here. Now, these people are not experienced builders. Mm. Wouldn't it have been a little wiser to leave this to the professionals?
Well, it's nice when the professionals are available, but God had opened the way, and when God opens the way, he provides the resources and the wisdom to be able to do that. Candace, I've always appreciated, you have a little proverb that you quote to me all the time.
Well, I always say that, those whom God calls, he enables. So he enables those whom he calls. And what I mean by that mm-hmm. is that we may think we don't have the skills to do whatever. Mm-hmm. But if God is calling you to do something, don't worry about not having the skills. Only worry about, are you willing to do what God wants you to do? Because he will then enable you to do it.
Jesus, one of his great parables, Matthew chapter 25, tells the story mm-hmm. of the man who receives 5 talents, 2 talents and 1 talent. And the ones who actually go to work and use their talents are the ones that actually grow and develop. Mm-hmm. So I may not have the talent right now to do something, but if I will use every opportunity, every resource that God has placed now in my resources, I can figure it out. Mm-hmm. God will enable, he will empower. And that's what Nehemiah did.
So this wasn't a case of leave it to the specialists.
Well, I'm sure there were a few specialists around. I'm sure there were some rock masons there. But most of the work had to be done, which was just bull hard, shall I say, grunt work. But it had to be done. And so the specialists were probably there, practically speaking, instructing the people who didn't have the expertise how to build the arches, how to put in the gates, and how to fit the wall, the big rocks together so they couldn't be pried apart. They probably were doing all of that. But the vast majority of the work was being done by people who didn't have expertise in that particular area.
I think that's another way we can see a picture of the leader, Nehemiah. Mm-hmm. You know, here is a guy who motivates a whole bunch of people.
It is impressive.
Them involved. It's very impressive. And there's a whole bunch of volunteers. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to be there, but they wanted to be there. And I think this is a really key. People like to be involved where the action is. They want to be involved in something big. 52 days, we're going to, you know, rebuild this wall. That is huge. Why would I want to miss out on it?
Mm-hmm. Something bigger than me and mine.
Absolutely.
That's right.
That big, big vision. Well, we know that even with a big vision, it wasn't all smooth sailing. Right from the beginning, Nehemiah encountered opposition. He had it initially from those three surrounding groups that were around Jerusalem.
They were really enemies.
Enemy groups that had settled and felt that they had some rights in the area. I like Nehemiah's response in Nehemiah 2:20. He says, "You have no heritage or right or memorial in Jerusalem." In other words, go away, keep your nose out of our business. Now, this doesn't sound very politically correct to me. Wouldn't it have been a better idea to get a round table discussion going and everyone over there?
He didn't have time for that, Chantel. He had no time for nonsense.
Okay. No round table.
And these people were enemies. For more than 100 years, they had been opposing God's work. It was very clear. They had made their colors known. And so it was very clear who was the enemy and who wasn't. And said Nehemiah draws the line in the sand, so to speak, and says, "This is our job. Now stay out of our business. We're going to do what needs to be done."
So round table discussions aren't always the way to go under every circumstance.
Perhaps initially to get the, you know, to make things at least open the doors for dialogue and to gain cooperation. But if it's clear who is opposed and who is an enemy of God's work, we need to
go ahead,
you know, respectfully, mm-hmm. but boldly and move ahead with what God is opening the door to.
Well, the opposition didn't go away, even when he said, "Leave us alone, we're doing our own thing." It just gets more intense and threatening. How does Nehemiah deal with this?
Well, one of the things that I really appreciate about Nehemiah is he wasn't going to let the lack of opportunity to stop him. Everybody has their slot on the wall to build. And when the enemy physically attacks, he goes to work and he arms everybody. He says, "Get your sword, your shield, and all those kind of weapons, and some of you will stand guard, and some of you will work, and we'll set up an alarm system mm-hmm. so that if we're attacked over there, everybody can mm-hmm. rush there and do those kind of things." He was strategic, he was practical, and he went after the work as best he could and didn't let things stop him.
This isn't what I always think of as a visionary, this man. He's practical as well.
He's practical, and there's another dimension to this too, is Chantel. We often speak about the more passive Christian virtues, love, joy, peace, patience, and kindness and gentleness. And without question, we should all be that. But there are the proactive, there are the bold attributes of character. We need to be strong for God. We need to be bold for God. And just to sit back and say, "Oh yeah, well, we're going to sing Kumbaya." Don't get me wrong. That's a beautiful song. But God calls for us to stop holding hands and get the trowel and the shovel in our hands and go ahead with the work.
Go and get our hands dirty, actually. Or maybe raw in this case, pulling those big
And that's another around. Picture of the leadership of Nehemiah that I so love in this book, is Nehemiah was there with them. Mm-hmm. He wasn't sitting out there in some nice shack. You know, with
air-conditioned office.
Yeah, fanning his face. and handing him grapes to eat. He was out there in the battlefield, in the midst of his volunteers. He was there, and he cared about his guys. He didn't want to see them deterred, and he didn't like hearing the harassment and the criticism all these guys were throwing at him. He was in the midst of the battle with his people, and I love that.
There's nothing like leadership by example in
a
situation.
And it wasn't only just the example of getting out there and lifting stones with them and all those kind of things, but when he was threatened, because we find later on in the story that there was this one of the
opposition.
He was a double agent. He was one of the Jews, and yet he was, he comes up and he says,
we're going to talk about him a lot more.
Okay.
You want to give us a quick summary?
Well, in this particular situation, this guy comes up and tries to frighten Nehemiah and says, look, the only place for you to be secure is to go into the safe.
Right,
which was
the temple.
And go into the most innermost room, and there you're going to be safe. And Nehemiah says, no. You can't frighten me. I will not be frightened. And that whole theme of a Christian leader not being frightened, I think, is one of the qualities that the Bible
really jump out. This no fear.
Yeah.
This no fear. There's a text that I love in 2 Timothy. This is 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. And in this particular passage, we find here that the Apostle Paul is writing, and he says in verse 7, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind.
Amen. Amen.
God hasn't given to any one of us as Christians, he hasn't given to any one of us as followers of him, a spirit of fear. Now, that doesn't mean to say we're presumptuous and stick ourselves into dangerous situations unnecessarily.
Right.
But God says, if I've opened the door for you,
march forward.
March forward, even though you might be scared spitless, so to speak.
There's no fear in love. And when we're working for God, our God, we don't have to be afraid.
Amen.
In chapter 6, things get even more complicated. We have that double agent that Brad was just telling us about. He was paid by the opposition. Now, would there be principles that we can extract for handling really untrustworthy people? We'll be back right after the break to discuss this more. We are speaking about Nehemiah's story. In the middle of dealing with all this horrible opposition that he's getting, we suddenly find Nehemiah getting upset about high interest rates and mortgage. In chapter 5, we have the poor complaining about this. Now, I can understand the predicament over here. I think all of us can complain about similar things. But despite the urgency of his wall-building project, Nehemiah takes the time to sort this out. I find this a little strange. Here we have a leader that's single-minded, that's not to be distracted by any of the opposition, and yet he takes the time to sort out interest rates and mortgage questions over here.
Well, a leader's life is complex.
And there's always the money to be managed.
Yes.
And the people were short of food. And what was happening in this context was that the poor people had mortgaged their land and their crops to wealthy church members. Let's face it, this was a church
community. This is an in-house thing.
And so these people were oppressed. Now, there was a couple things happening here. The Bible specifically, in the Old Testament, in the teachings of Moses, forbade that there was to be a high rates of interest. And if a person did mortgage at a reasonable rate of interest, the interest and the principal was to be forgiven every 7 years.
Wow.
So these people, these leaders, the wealthy people, were oppressing the poor people. And it was resulting in a lot of physical hardship. And they weren't following God's plan. And Nehemiah says, no, you guys, stop it.
That's good and well, but what does that have to do with wall building? I mean, couldn't these social issues wait until after they finished their war?
No, they couldn't. Not at all, because he cared about his people. He cared about his volunteers. And that's another attribute of a true leader. They care about their
team. The
whole
person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is not your classical leader that's completely focused on getting the job done and is willing to stand on heads to get there.
The wrong leadership says, there's a job to be done, and I'm going to get the credit for it. And come any obstacle, I'm going to overcome it because I'm going to get the credit for it.
Yeah.
Nehemiah wasn't that way.
Not at all.
The people, it had to be, everybody had to be a winner in this situation.
If we don't all get there together, it's not worth the trip. The end definitely doesn't seem to justify the means
And these people were in great difficulty, and Nehemiah stands up. He says, gentlemen, you need to forgive these debts. You need to return the interest. You need to make things right with the people.
And right with God if we want his blessing.
That's right.
On us over here. Now, we touched on this a little bit before, but I'd love to come back because this is, you know, this is just tickles my imagination. We had this double agent working over here. Now, I don't know at what point Nehemiah realizes that he has a double agent on hand over here, but are there any principles that we can extract? I mean, we don't want to second guess anybody we're working with and think they're a double agent, but at times people can be not that trustworthy. How do we deal with them?
Well, you know, I think as leaders for God, we need to be wise. We need to be savvy. We need to be sensitive to what's happening around us. And when people aren't fulfilling things, we shouldn't be gullible. You know, there's the teaching when there's the misinterpretation, shall I say, that when somebody slaps you on this side of the cheek, that you should turn and do this. Now, Jesus did say that, and he did teach that. But and we should. Mm-hmm. I'm not in any way denying that we should be submissive when there's oppression. But that doesn't mean to say you don't learn from that situation.
Okay, so learn, you say.
A person has to learn. And many times when people are, shall I say, physically or sexually abused in a relationship, we do need to forgive, but we also
need to put up
barriers of protection. We have to be smart for that, and the same in business. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of dishonest people, and Nehemiah recognized Shemaiah ultimately was a double agent.
And he took precautions.
And he took precaution, and he didn't fall for the deception of Shemaiah.
I think it's important for a leader, again, coming back to the attributes of a leader, to call sin by its right name. And that, again, takes courage. Sometimes it's easier to say, oh, well, you know, let's just sweep it under the carpet. But a true leader will not do that. They'll do it politely and with the Spirit of Christ, but they need to confront evil and have the courage to do it.
Well, I know that you have so much more you could share with us on the story, but the time's just flown by. But we can't end without asking you, what was your favorite part, Brad?
Well, my favorite part has to do with this.
You're not planning on throwing that,
are you? No, I'm not. Don't need to fear. A brick. You know, in this chapter 6, the same story about Shemaiah, the double agent, we find this story where Nehemiah is invited off to a peace conference and to a discussion, and he knows it's totally a deception, just a distraction. They're trying to get him away from the work. And he says here in verse 3, I'm doing a great work. This is Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 3. I'm doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? In other words, he says, hand me another brick. I got to get this brick laid.
Pass me another brick.
That's right.
Is his answer.
And that's my one of my favorite passages in the book of Nehemiah. He knew his job. He was focused. And, you know, even as a Christian leader, we can get distracted onto a lot of good things, but they're not what God has called us primarily to do. And that is where we need
Pass
to stay
the brick.
Focused. Give me another brick.
Chantal, I want to go back to Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 20. Mm-hmm. Here, I just totally love this. Nehemiah, as a true leader, begins with the end in mind. Mm. The God of heaven, he will prosper us. He had a definite goal. I just totally love this. I find this inspiring for me personally.
That goal.
Yes.
That definite goal that Nehemiah had.
Yes, and that God will prosper us. This is not about us. This is about God working through us.
It's all about God.
Absolutely. And I see in Nehemiah that wonderful leader who just is able to espouse that and envision it and mobilize and get it done.
Well, this was a fantastic story. Thank you so much for joining me, Brad and Candace. Pass the brick.
Yeah, pass the brick.
I really enjoyed this story. If you came in halfway through and you missed out on a part of it, don't worry. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline. You can watch this episode or any other episode. Now, don't go anywhere. There's still more. Nehemiah's story reminds me that you and I are called to something much bigger than our little everyday survival struggles. We're being called to mend the breaches in the wall, to help provide safety and security, and most of all, give vision to those around us. It's a daunting, impossible task. It's far too big for me or you to take on alone. But together, we can work as a team and do the impossible under the leadership of our great leader, Jesus. The going won't always be easy. Like Nehemiah, we'll meet opposition from without and even from within. But by putting our trust in God, we can go steadily forward. After all, if God be for us, who can be against us? We are working on something so much bigger than a wall. We are preparing people for Jesus' soon coming. I invite you to put the plot of your storyline, your time and energy into the hands of a God who is involved in this work and who wants your life to be part of the ultimate success story right now.